Welcome to The Graveyard Shift, the podcast where anything goes, as long as there's a good story to tell. Join Todd, Matt, Jimmy, and Gary as they bust myths and share advice that hopefully isn't terrible. Let's dive in.
Welcome to The Graveyard Shift. Everyone, this is our last recording of the year and the last recording of our first season, and I couldn't think of a better way to wrap up season one of The Graveyard Shift than having Glenda Stansbury on the podcast with us. So Glenda, thank you so much for joining us. Now, last episode, we talked a lot about celebrant training, and Matt led that for us and did a great job kind of laying the foundation there. So tell us a little bit about your background and also how you're connected to celebrant training.
Well, thank you for having me. I have told Matt all year that I wanted to be on this, so thanks for finally asking me. Well, I started my career in special education, and I was an educator, and then I worked for the Oklahoma Education Association. So I was really not part of this world at all. And then my father, Doug Manning, some people know him, got into writing in the areas of grief and elder care and started his own publishing company, Insight Books. And in 1995, he asked me to go to work for him. And so I had to learn the publishing company and got, started understanding the customers that we were selling grief books to. And it was the funeral profession and hospice and hospitals and churches and all those kind of people. So I first became introduced to that. And then in 1999, Doug had brought the concept of celebrants back from Australia, New Zealand. He had seen it in practice there for serving people that did not have a denomination or a religious or a church affiliation. And he kept saying, we need this. And I kept saying, I don't know how to do this. And we just did it. And we put together a training and had our first one in 1999. And it just kind of has grown from there exponentially. And we've trained over 6,000 celebrants all over the world in the past 25 years. And so out of that, I decided I needed to understand this profession better. So I went back to mortuary school, got my second bachelor's degree when I was 50. That wasn't fun. And so I'm a licensed funeral director and embalmer in Oklahoma. And then in 2007, I started teaching at the University of Central Oklahoma. And in 2020, I started teaching at Worsham. So I'm privileged to teach at two different mortuary programs, mm-hmm. as well as training celebrants and traveling around and doing those trainings, as well as serving as a celebrant for local funeral homes here in the area. So it's been a 25-year inundation in learning this profession and how we serve families in really unique and different ways. So that's kind of been the journey, and it just kind of keeps going.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that, Glenda. And, how did you bump into this group of people?
Oh, golly.
Bad luck.
A prison lineup, I think.
Oklahoma Work Release Program.
Is it true that you lost a bet?
Program. There you go. We all look good in neon vests.
Gary and I met. That's right. Gary and I met through ICCFA when I mm-hmm. started working with the ICCFA University. We started doing celebrant training there, 20 years ago, Gary. And so we've been deans together at the university. Jimmy and I don't know. We just kind of met through stuff, really, just going to conventions, meeting each other. Yeah, prison. Matt came to celebrant training. I don't know what year, Matt. And Doug and I both were so impressed with him. He gives off a good first impression.
Downhill from there.
After that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when Doug decided to get off the road, he was 85 and said, I'm tired of traveling and, climbing on planes. And so I knew I needed some trainers to go with me to do celebrant training. And we reached out to Matt intentionally because he was an owner and understood the owner's position of utilizing celebrants and what that meant for a business. And he graciously, begrudgingly agreed. And so he comes and trains with me two or three times a year. We usually try to always have him at NFDA and, you know, places where we're going to have a larger group of funeral professionals there. And so he has put up with me for the last 7 years, basically, as we have traveled around and trained.
Glenda, is it true, Glenda, that Matt being a part of your team was the most desperate thing you've ever done in your life?
Close. Very close. There's a couple of other things that we can't talk about on camera, but it was pretty close.
Matt has, don't worry. We won't share this with anybody.
No, this is not being recorded or anything.
No.
Just us friends.
Matt has
I
been
didn't explain this to Glenda, but we have tens of listeners now.
I know. Well, you understand that I tell I have my students in one of my classes listen to podcasts, and this is on the list. So, you know, this will be interesting next year when they want to write a report on it. Now, Matt has been a true joy for me to train together, and I know he rolls his eyes at me all the time, but we get through a 3-day training and survive.
I think you all would describe me as a true joy, actually, in the various ways in which we interact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sheer joy. Yes.
It's important that you keep telling yourself that, Matt.
Uh-huh. So Glenda, you know, just kind of thinking about the impact to the profession and impact to grieving families, I would make an argument that few things have impacted the profession and the grieving public as much as Doug Manning's impact on those things, and by close association, the work of the funeral celebrant and the training and the impact on our profession that way. So, you know, just over the years, you know, how have you seen this concept of a funeral celebrant and this concept of a personalized service impact the profession?
Well, thank you for saying that about Doug and about celebrants. I appreciate that. You know, when we first started, you know, put out our first training in 1999 and really got started in 2000, and truly most of the profession looked at us like we were crazy. We don't need no stinking celebrants. You know, we've got Reverend Rolodex that can come in and do a service for us. And we were kind of seen as a threat. A lot of the funeral professionals thought that we were going to come in and tell families, just go cremate and then come to us and we'll create a service for you. And so we have been intentional from the very beginning. Doug's position has always been the funeral director is the most important person in this family's life. And he wanted to elevate that role rather than take it away and create opportunities for people to come back to the funeral rather than the cremation families that were walking out the door with the urn in their hand. So it took a while for them to kind of look at us and not see us as an enemy, which is usually the default of a lot of funeral professionals when anything new comes along. And really it took off, but began to take off when New Jersey Funeral Directors Association was the first association that came to us and said, we believe in this and we want to sponsor it. And so they sponsored 3 trainings in 1 year, and that kind of gave us a little bit of validity with other people going, okay, maybe they're not evil. Maybe not. But so really after we started kind of getting validation from a couple of the associations, then others came along, and truly in the last 10 years, every training we've done has been sponsored by a state or a national association. Mm-hmm. So that has helped. You know, NFDA, ICCFA, CANA have all come on board, as well as several state associations. Ohio sponsors one almost every year. You know, there's a New Jersey, New York and New Jersey. There's several of them that have really validated that this is an important part of the profession. Mm-hmm. And for funeral professionals to get comfortable with, it's not going to look like your grandpa's funeral, and it's going to feel different. It's going to look different. It's going to sound different. But the end result is we're just here to help grieving families. End of conversation. Yeah. Whatever that means, whatever that takes. And I think giving celebrants and giving funeral professionals the opportunity to think differently and to dream differently and to vision differently has certainly helped. Do I still have a whole lot of funeral guys out there who say, we ain't doing that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, as we say in training, funeral
for those folks, Glenda.
I have names.
Other than Jimmy.
Yeah. Jimmy has said for 10 years he's going to bring me down to do celebrant training for his staff.
you trained our celebrant. What else do
I
we
did.
Need?
You have a great celebrant, and I trained them, and you're right. But I think just watching the ripple effect of funeral directors talking to funeral directors and saying, hey, this is working for me, and I'm seeing my families happier and helped and healthier, or they're coming back for another service, or people who are sitting in the audience making judgments about what service they want, certainly has helped give us a little bit more standing and impact on how they view what we can do for the profession.
Well, that's excellent. And, in your comments, you mentioned the word cremation, right? And some of the motive is like, how do we handle these families who are now choosing cremation?
Right.
And kind of having that, well, we don't need anything, or we'll handle it on our own.
Yes.
So let's kind of shift a little bit to cremation arranger training specifically.
Okay.
So what are your thoughts on tell us about what the cremation arranger training that you work with.
That has been kind of a joy of my life. I mean, celebrants is my first love, but I love going out and doing arranger training, specifically cremation arranger training, because even now, 25 years into the adjustment, so many funeral professionals still feel disappointed, let down, or angry about our cremation families. And I tell this story often. I apprenticed as a 50-year-old. I apprenticed at one of the largest funeral homes here in Oklahoma City. This gentleman has a beautiful facility. He built a crematory. He has everything set up. And he was so disgusted by cremation families. And I literally sat with him in arrangement. And he said to a family, "We bury our dead, we burn our trash." I just, yes, hello. And this was in 2005, guys. I mean, it wasn't like ancient history, right? And I'm just looking at him going, okay. But that's not an unlikely response from a whole lot of funeral directors, right? They see them as less than or second-class citizens, or they just don't want to spend any money. And so part of what I've tried to do through celebrants, for sure, but also just through having a standalone conversation about this, is to say, cremation families want to spend the money. They just want to spend it on something that means something. And when they have the choice, our burial families don't have a lot of choice. They need us to get them from point A to point Z. And, except in Texas, they don't throw the caskets in the back of the truck and drive them to the cemetery. But a cremation family gets to walk out the door and go do it on their own and go to the club or go to the yacht club or, go wherever. And so if we're not modeling for them what's different and what can be unique and what can be special and healing, then they have no reason to spend money with us. And so what I say in arranger training a lot is we have a tendency to sit down and say, what kind of service do you want? Or we define it by burial versus cremation.
Mm-hmm.
And what I say to directors and what I say to families is, you have made good decisions about how you wish to honor the body. This is great. Now let's talk about how we're going to honor the life.
Mm.
Now let's talk about what that looks like. And my next question is, what does gathering look like for you all? When your family is getting together, what does gathering look like? And how does that mean something to you? How do we make meaning out of that as we gather to honor this life?
Mm-hmm.
And, if you have a family who's really unsure, and just be able to say, how are we going to stop with intention to honor the fact that this life lived? And what are the elements that are going to be important to you as we put this together? And so it's really more a because as soon as we say the C word, a lot of funeral directors have a tendency to just shut down. Here's our immediate cremation package. Here you go. You know, do you want a viewing? Whatever. Rather than taking it as an opportunity to paint a picture. You know, we could have we could have candle lighting. We could have a sand ceremony. We could have everybody come up and put roses around the urn or leave a note, you know, creating the same kinds of ceremonies that we do for a burial family as we do for cremation family. And then this was probably one of the most fun things I've ever done. I was in Ohio, Kentucky, whatever that line is over there, doing a cremation training earlier this year. And it just kind of came out. I didn't even plan to say this. And I just kind of said off the cuff, I said, I would like to do away with the word traditional.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an older gentleman who was sitting there taking notes, which kind of cracked me up, but he was taking notes of everything I was saying. And he stopped and he put his pen down and he said, what would you call it? And I said, a service. And he said, you've changed my life. And I thought, well, okay, that was easy. You know?
Yeah. Wow. Profound.
Profound. I mean, they pay me the big bucks to be profound, right?
Yeah.
But the point here is that we have gotten so locked into these boxes and how we define and how we check off, rather than, and perhaps this is because I come at this with a celebrant mind more than an arranger mind, but you know, I sit down with every family and say, I have a blank piece of paper. Let's go. Tell me what's going to be important to you. I met with a family yesterday of an 18-year-old who died of an overdose. And they said, we would like a sound bath. Well, for those of you who don't know that, that's, you know, ringing, singing bowls and doing all, you know, kind of a Zen kind of meditation piece to that. A traditional sound bath, pardon the word traditional, a regular sound bath is everybody gets on the floor and lays on mats and does that. And I said, is that what you're thinking? Is that what that looks like?
Thank you for clarifying that for Gary.
Yes, yes. I said, you know, is that what you're thinking? No, we would just like to have some time, you know, with the singing bowl so that, you know, we can really get calm because this is what he used to use. And I said, great. Again, ask the questions and paint the picture rather than assuming that a cremation means nothing. You know, I've shown a video all over the world of this, you know, of a cremation service that I did last year for a woman who died in her hot tub. And we did the service in front of her hot tub where she died and hallowed that ground again and made it safe for her kids and for her husband. And there were 300 people there with catering. That cost over $50,000 for a cremation service because it meant something.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to get so much more intentional with our burial families, but really with our cremation families of saying, there are no, you know, there's no guidelines, there's no template. Let's talk about what gathering feels like for you and how we're going to honor this life. We know how we're going to honor the body. Now let's talk about how we honor the life, rather than allowing the disposition to define everything else, right? Some of the most creative services I've ever had were cremation services.
Yeah.
Just simply because we had those opportunities.
We did the Passari Funeral Director's Life did a large consumer study. It was a follow-up study from the 2011 study we did in 2021. And when asking families who are choosing cremation, we at, and by the way, I've talked to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of funeral directors, shown them a slide with the data on it.
Yeah.
And before I show them the answers, I ask the question to the funeral directors. And what I like to see is the disconnect between what the funeral director says and what the family says, right?
Yes.
So this is the question that we ask. And I just, you know, and the group can kind of chime in here, but we asked this question in this research and we said, with cremation, there's no need for a funeral service. So we look for how many, what percent of the families agree with the statement, with cremation, there's no need for a funeral service. So we have the family's actual answers, over 4,000 or 3,000 people we surveyed for this. So what, I mean, the guests, just asked Jimmy and Gary and Matt, what do you think most funeral directors say when they are in an arrangement conference, the word cremation's on the table? What percent of funeral directors believe themselves that that family's not asking for a funeral?
80.
80?
I'm embarrassed because I know I've heard this stat before and I can't recall it. So I think
it was very important to your life.
60, 65? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Now, you know, that's what I hear most often. About 2/3 of the funeral directors say with cremation, they're thinking the family believes there's no need for a funeral service. Now, that's anecdotal research. I just ask it in group settings, and I just over the time have done show of hands and accumulated those results. Here's what the research is. And is only 14% of the public would say that with cremation, there's no need for a funeral. So the vast majority, and that's such a, you know, that's, you think about the impact of that stat. So Glenda, you know, you have a funeral director whose assumption is only 85% of the people are thinking, you know, or the public is expecting a funeral. 85% are expecting a funeral, but the funeral director is thinking the other ratio. They're thinking only, you know, it's a needle in a haystack if I find a funeral or a family that wants a some kind of a memorial event. So the question is, what's driving this disconnect? I'd love opinions on this. So I'm trying to figure it out.
I think a lot of funeral directors are angry at cremation families. I think a lot of them still feel resentful that in their mind, they rejected what we were offering for a very long time and they took it personally and they decided to not waste their time with it. And I think that becomes habit forming and a pattern that repeats across teams and staffs and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, so they're blaming the family for the cremation
It's a revenue issue. You know, if you're not going to buy my casket and my vault and my embalming and all that, then you're a second class citizen in my world, right? Yeah. And it's so therefore it's just easier for me to slap down the GPL. Here's our immediate cremation, and then I'm out of there in 20 minutes because I don't want to mess with you because I don't know what to do with you.
Right? Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, so I think that might be one of the major transformations is the teaching, you know, the cremation arranger training is you give them something to do other than put down the price list and say, here it is. So, So you offer great, you know, talk us a little bit about some of the principles at the heart of cremation arranger training.
I truly believe it is breaking a lot of those old teachings. I mean, if I, as an apprentice, are sitting here with my mentor, hearing him do that, he's not the only one, right?
Yeah.
And so trying to get them past that, cremation means cheap. And I will be very honest with you. I would like to go back in time and when the FTC started telling us that we had to put our prices on a GPL and some brilliant funeral director said, I know, let's charge less for cremation. And I would like to find him and have a really deep conversation with him. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, why we are charging less? Just as much to my What, Gary?
Matt said, or her.
Or her.
Yeah, it was probably a guy. Yeah.
Probably not 30 years ago, Bailey. Come on.
Bingo. Now it's true.
Now it's true. Yeah. But, you know, we are charging less for something that takes just as much time, just as much effort, three times the liability, and we think this is a good idea, right? Mm-hmm. And so, in our minds, you know, the cremation family just means, you know, less work or less money, and I just don't want to mess with them, rather than going and saying, this is our opportunity to do something really amazing, and it may give us, you know, cremation gives us more time freedom, right? Where we could create some amazing opportunities. And I think part of what I try to do in arranger training is to, you know, show them videos of really amazing ceremonies. I believe ceremony is what saves our profession. if we understand how to put those together and how to offer them and how to execute them well, then people walk away saying, oh, I didn't know we could do that. But the other piece that I have learned about the funeral profession in the 25 years I've been here is that we are afraid.
Mm, yeah.
We're afraid that we're going to take a wrong step and it's going to blow our you know, reputation in the community and everybody's going to run away. We're afraid that the preachers aren't going to like what we do. We're afraid of so many, we're just locked in this prison of, I can't do anything different or unique because then it's going to offend somebody. Right?
Jimmy, what are you afraid of?
Yeah. Jimmy can relate to locked in a prison statement that, you know, he can relate to that, but that was actually my next question is, you know, what keeps funeral directors either from attending the training and getting good training? And then if they get the training, what keeps them from using the training? What are your thoughts on that? Other than fear, we covered that one pretty good.
I think fear is the biggest and, the best part about funeral professionals and the worst part about funeral professionals is that they have such a reverence for tradition and for what mm-hmm. has been done. And there's some really great things about that, but there's also some real limiting belief systems about that. And it just, for example, when I show some of the videos of, one of the funeral directors that I work with a lot, and he started taking videos and putting together 2-minute video montages and putting on Facebook. And the first time I put those up to show at a training, you could see the horror on these people's faces. They're like, you're taking pictures of families and you're putting it on Facebook. And how dare you do that? And I'm going, well, let's see. This one got 10,000 views in 24 hours. And the family loved it. So let's have that conversation. But they are just, they think that one wrong step is going to ruin them. And I think they've been taught that, if you do anything outside that boundary of the black suit and standing at the back door, handing out a service folder, then everybody's going to say, that you are no longer trustworthy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think a lot of it is modeling. I think that's why we go out, all of us that are involved in training and involved in presentation, is if you model bravery and courage and vision and creativity, then that gives them a little bit, that opens the door a little bit for them to say, okay, somebody else did it before I did, so maybe I can too.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear Matt and Jimmy and Gary's take on this, on these limiting beliefs that we can have in this profession, and what fear is one, risk, kind of a risk adverse group. So what are your thoughts, Matt? Let's start with you.
Doing anything the first time for a lot of people is just difficult for them. I mean, just pulling the bandaid off and getting started, it's always more work the first time you do something different, trying to get other people on the same page, trying to get them to explain it. I think back to when we started to offer tribute videos to families. And it was back when I may have told the story before on this show, I'm not sure, but you had to put the photos in an envelope and overnight them by FedEx to someone else, and they came back on a VHS tape. And families wouldn't do it. Like, they were limited in their belief. They're like, well, no, like we'll do the boards. We'll just do boards. We'll just do photo boards. And then eventually we started giving it away for free and just like showing them a sample of it. And they, as time went on, they began to incorporate it. And now it's just expected when they come in. Like if you're, I recently encountered a colleague that doesn't offer it at all. And I was like, really? I'm like, how many times a week do you have people like drop their jaw when talking to you? It's just a given at this point. I mean, even the most backwards people with typewriters and fax machines could figure out how to edit a video. So,
yeah.
I think change is difficult. This topic, any topic, but it also determines, what's next for us in the future. And I think sitting still and doing nothing is a choice. And I think the funeral homes that is their choice, that they're going to find themselves obsolete and out of business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an element to this that's based in reality, in that you get one shot to pull this service off. And a friend of all of ours, John Horan, said, funeral directors work for hugs. They don't work for money. And they want to pull it off. And the more variables they can control, the more confident they're going to be able to execute the service. And when you start adding other variables in, it's tough for them because, well, if it goes wrong, then I'm going to mm-hmm. ruin this whole event I've planned. You just have to, from leadership position, you have to encourage that even when it goes wrong. Even when the Dove guy, I've told a couple of stories about Dove releases that went horribly awry. You have to continue pushing the envelope, because if we don't, somebody else is going to. Somebody else is going to figure out how to make that more meaningful and be able to manage it. And so I empathize with funeral directors, and I really work with our management staff that when things go bad, don't react immediately, because if you mm-hmm. do, you're going to say some things you're going to regret. Because as long as the funeral director was trying to make something happen that was meaningful to the family and it didn't work, that's still a positive thing for your firm. It's not a negative thing. So
yeah,
part of it is human beings don't like change. I get that part of it. But part of it is there's a real risk there for the individual to go out on a limb and say, okay, we're going to try this. I can't remember the name of the bowl thing where you're playing the meditation sounds.
Sound bath.
The singing bowl. If that somehow doesn't work or whatever, now you've pulled a core piece of the service out and it didn't work. And some of the families are understanding, some of them aren't. So there's a balancing act there, but I do have a lot of empathy for funeral directors trying to pull off new things, because every, one out of 20 is going to blow up in your face. And that's not a pretty outcome. Go ahead, Glenda.
Two things, Todd. First of all, no matter what we do, whether it's completely successful or not, the bar is so low, guys. That anything we do, can be unique and wonderful, and people walk away going, wow, right? And, so that's part of it. Second part is understand who is waiting outside the door. My last three celebrate trainings, I've had event planners come to these trainings.
Yep.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now, and of course, I'm the first one to say, the Brent, the funeral director that I do a whole lot of work with, he was in the event industry for 20 years. And so he came into this with a different vision and a different sight line for what can be done and how to put it together. But there's event planners out there that are going, I could do that.
Glenda, right? You got to refuse those people.
Yeah. What are you doing to us? Come on.
Are you Golly. Are you going to pay that registration instead for me, Jimmy?
I can't afford that. I'm on a fixed income. Yeah.
It's true.
But Glenda, I think that illustrates the point, though. There's also a risk in doing nothing.
Yes.
We think that the familiar is risk-free, and it's not. It's just familiar.
And our next generations of people, Matt Bailey and younger, are looking at this going, I know how to run Canva. I know how to have Spotify. I can do this. What do I need you for? So either we're going to get in front of that train or we're left behind. Literally, I was doing this training. I was doing an arranger training in a kind of a rural area. And I was showing one of the videos and I said, one of the most important things you can do is learn who your vendors are. Learn who can bring chairs. Who can bring tables? Who can help you cater? You don't have to carry this burden by yourself. Learn who your vendors are. And this sweet little guy raised his hand. He said, what's a vendor?
Mm.
Well, we have more to learn than I thought.
Well, awesome. Well, Glenda, let's turn the kind of the direction of the discussion a little bit to the future. So you work with mortuary students. So what are you seeing in the mortuary schools? How are we doing there? with celebrant training or cremation arranger training, and then, you know, where do you, because they're our future, right? I mean, yes. we're all not going to be here forever. So what are you seeing, and what do you, maybe this evolves into its whole a whole new graveyard shift episode where we talk about mortuary education, but give us a snapshot of what
snapshot
you see.
Snapshot is, and of course everybody kind of knows this, they've seen the statistics. Certainly the gender demographics are incredibly different now. You know, when I started teaching in 2007, I was about 85% male, and now I am 85% female or more. Mm-hmm. I mean, in two of my classes, I had 38 females and two identified males. So it's, the gender difference is definitely here. It's just here. It's not just going to happen. So I'm seeing that. I'm seeing so few second and third generations. They're just not coming. You know, this generation, you know, the millennial Gen Z group have looked at their parents and said, I don't want to live like that. Thank you very much. And so all of the kids in my classes are all, for the most part, I've got two or three that are second generation, but for the most part, they are not, you know, they're coming in new, fresh, not been involved in the funeral profession before. And so that's good in that they're not bringing old baggage, but it also means that they are coming in clueless as far as all of the process and how it runs. And so as far as what we're trying to do in all of the mortuary schools, I can't speak for everybody's curriculum, but you know, four of our mortuary schools now incorporate celebrants into the curriculum, which is great. And I'm trying to build on that and get more of the schools to do that. You know, CCMS and PIMS and Milwaukee and Arapaho currently have celebrants just as, you know, capstone. You know, your last semester, you're going to go through celebrant training, which is great, because even if those students are not going to come out and actually stand behind a podium and be a celebrant, they understand the process. They understand what happens. They understand how to offer them. So that's thrilling for me. I think more and more are doing a better job at cremation arranger training, but I think our curriculum as it stands is still not as robust and forward-thinking as it should be. And then I'm watching my students go out to apprentice with local firms and coming back disappointed, discouraged, leave the profession before they even finish their degree, because they're running up against a whole lot of, we've never done it that way before. Stand in the corner, go sweep and go empty the trash, and I'll let you stand at the door and hand out service folders. And so there's a lot of fierce pushback for anything new or different. And, you know, and I tell my students, I say, I'm going to teach you all kinds of new ways to think about arranging and creating ceremony and how to serve families. You may have to stick it in your back pocket for a while. You know, until you have a chance to have a little bit more autonomy over how you're working with families. But, and you know, the complaint I get from the other side, the complaint I get from the funeral directors is these kids don't want to work. You know, they want time off and they want weekends and they, I'm so tired of hearing about work-life balance. And I finally said to one of the funeral directors, I said, I agree with them. You know, I don't think what we've done in the past is that healthy. And I think part of the problem is we have historically understaffed because we love the victim martyr badge that we get to wear. And so we need to think differently about what staffing looks like or what payment looks like or, you know, all those pieces. And that is a hard, hard road to hoe. It's the old, you know, if you want
to run a business.
Right. You know, but it's the old, I had to live over the funeral home and take call on a beeper at 2 o'clock in the morning. Why don't you want to? Right. And, so finding the balance between really these students will work. They just want to work at something that means something.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to go pull weeds and mop the floor again. We all know we have to do some of that, but if that's all that they're giving the opportunity to do, and they're told that none of their ideas are worthwhile and we're not going to do anything new or different, they are truly walking away going, this isn't how I want to serve families.
Yeah.
So we've got to disconnect.
Yeah, we do. And what I'd like to do is we'll invite you. We are inviting you back on a future episode. We'll take a deep dive in that subject.
I think
that means a lot, because I think we're all here because we believe that there are great things ahead in the future of this profession. I'm just going to throw this out there that I think what's going to keep our next generation of our current generation of workers motivated and helpers motivated, and our next generation and families, it's all about meaning. That's what I took away from this episode.
Absolutely.
Let's keep the meaning in funerals and the meaningfulness there. And whatever, however families define that, we deliver that. We're all going to be just fine. So, hey, Glenda, we're going to wrap up. I really appreciate you coming in and joining us. Very insightful and very meaningful conversation here. So thank you. And I just ask this as we wrap. You know, we ask our listeners to do two things just to keep it simple. Just go do something, apply something that they learned today, put it to use in their business. And also, we just encourage our listeners to share the graveyard shift and the ideas that we talk about here with others so we can lift up this profession. So thank you so much, Glenda, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Glenda. Fantastic job. Thank you.